Welcome to Underdog Stuff with Gregory Neesmith, live radio show and podcast that we do here every week on WHCR 90.3 FM, the voice of Harlem, your source for coverage, opinions, and coaching of Underdog Stuff in politics, culture, and personal life. And as always, the Underdog Stuff team is in full effect in the studio. Gregory Neesmith, entrepreneur, coach, consultant, and on-air personality, representing. I live in Harlem, so I'm repping Harlem by way of starting out in Philadelphia and happy to be here in New York City. And to my left, for those who are watching, Asha Davis.
Hi.
Award-winning advertising executive, comedy writer, and proud Torontonian representing the Six.
And Canada.
Shout out to Canada. There's some people who want to move to Canada given all that's going on here in the U.S.
Yep.
And shout out to Kirsten Magwood, also part of the Underdog Stuff team. And as always, we don't want to go on the journey alone today, so we welcome all the Underdogs' phone calls at area code 212-650-6903. That's 212-650-6903. Or you can comment and watch all at the same time on Facebook Live at facebook.com/Gregory Neesmith, GregoryNeesmith.
Lots of letters, but it's worth it.
I totally agree with that. I'm glad you said that. Today's episode, get your people.
Mm-hmm.
Get your people. Get your mans in them.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes in politics, culture, and personal life, we need to go get some folks and they need a timeout or to go sit in the corner or maybe just be kicked off the island. And we will talk about it this week in all the uns that go on, the unavoidable, the unjust, the uninhibited, the underreported. You get it by now, all the uns in Underdog Stuff. But first, let's talk about one of the most unavoidable and tragic news stories of the week. And if it feels like here we go again, it's because last week there was the start of the Harvey natural disaster tragedy, which I say start of because it's still going on. Just because the weather has stopped and the news has moved on to new things, people in Texas and Louisiana are still dealing with Harvey.
Mm-hmm.
And our thoughts and prayers are with them. And then if that wasn't enough, what happened this week? Irma. And Irma is literally, as we talk live right now, in Florida.
Yeah, exactly. So basically the latest information that we had is that, well, we know that 7 million people, over 7 million people were required to evacuate. We saw at the last minute the sort of storm made a turn and it sort of was going towards a trajectory to Tampa versus sort of hitting Miami head on. We do know that at this point there are millions of people, over a million people have already lost power. They're thinking that that could be reach up to 2 million across the southeast as it continues to sort of move north. So everybody, please be safe in Florida right now.
Yeah, because this storm is major because before it got to Florida, it went through several islands in the Caribbean.
Exactly.
And the reported amount of loss is just staggering.
It's staggering. I mean, Barbuda, 95% of the island is damaged. St. Martin, 90% is damaged. And then we also saw St. Bart's, Puerto Rico, U.S. Virgin Islands, Anguilla, and parts of Cuba have also been severely damaged.
Just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And we will continue to have our thoughts and prayers with the folks who have already experienced Irma. And then now it's not even over. There's still parts of Florida that are going to be in its path.
Yeah. And, you know, there's almost 25 people have died as a result of this. We're talking like 11 people on St. Martin's and St. Bart's. Four people have died as a result of this in the U.S. Virgin Islands, four in the British Virgin Islands. You know, this is not just, you know, destroying property. It's deadly and it's lethal. And please be safe.
Yeah. Our hearts go out to everybody affected by this. And we will continue to watch throughout the day and in the coming days and weeks, and hopefully no more loss of life. And again, though, I will say, just like with Harvey, it's also cool to see that so many people are helping each other.
And coming together, exactly.
Yeah. So we'll keep our eye out on Irma and also Harvey.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Cool. With that, let's get into the show. Get your people. Your girl is back in the news.
I can't. I. You know what, man?
The show's called Get Your People. So this time,
I, it's I know, but
that,
this.
So I say it just because I'm trying to weave in the theme of the show. So in this case, it's not a personal attack to your people or your girl, but it's part of the
but
flow.
But this time, let's. What happened this week? You tell me.
Your girl's in them.
Yeah.
The notorious HRC.
Oh gosh.
Also known as Hillary Rodham Clinton, mm-hmm. I said it correctly this time.
Yes.
Is back in the news because literally this week she's dropping her book, What Happened? And she's also started dropping some hints as to who she blames for losing the election.
Yeah. That is, yeah.
So I'm going to start. There's three people that made her newsworthy this week that she blamed.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to save the best of those three for last because we're going to talk about him the most.
Right.
But there's two people she called out.
Who?
Barack Obama.
No, she didn't.
Keep his name out your mouth. She said that Barack Obama said, yo, ease up on Bernie. Don't go that hard on him. It'll divide the party. Just, you know, chill out, lay back. Don't go hard on Bernie.
Okay.
And like the Hillary we know and love who sometimes doesn't take responsibility for stuff, instead of her choosing to listen to Obama or choosing not to, she now blames herself or blames Obama for the advice that she chose to take.
Wow.
So Obama back in the news because of
that's some audacity right there.
But wait, that's one person.
Mm-hmm.
There's three. So now there was a second person she went for.
Mm-hmm.
Uncle Joe.
Mr. Biden.
Yes.
What'd she say?
The vice president of the United States to Barack Obama for the 8 years before we got the Agent Orange in office. And she said that she was mad that Joe said that she didn't have a message for the white working class.
She said that she didn't have a message for the white working class. And so what was her response to that?
Her response is like, Joe, you were out here campaigning with me. You saw what I was doing. You were out there doing it too. How could you say such a thing?
Wow.
But guess what? I think Joe's right because she didn't go to Wisconsin. She didn't go to Michigan that often. And she was only in Pennsylvania, like near the end with like Katy Perry in Philadelphia, which wasn't enough.
Which was not enough. I mean, technically he was right. Like if her, you know, there, technically he was right. So,
I mean, I would agree.
Exactly.
So now, so she's back in the news talking about Obama. And Joe Biden basically going at the last administration,
mm-hmm.
blaming everyone else but herself.
Mm-hmm.
But she wasn't done. Guess who else she went after?
Who's? I think I have an idea, but.
The guy who was like, the millionaires, the billionaires, the system's rigged.
Mr. Bernie.
She went after Bernie Sanders, basically saying that Bernie made her look bad in the primaries, which caused her to look bad in the general election.
Mm.
Him calling her out for taking money from Wall Street and things like that. She said that that led to Donald Trump then being able to eventually call her Crooked Hillary.
Wow.
So she blamed Bernie for campaigning against her for why Trump was able to campaign against her.
She said that it caught her, his attacks on her character caused lasting damage. And she basically said that in the book, that damage made it harder to unify progressives in the general election and paving the way for his Crooked Hillary campaign. I mean, that's crazy.
She's going after Bert.
Like, why?
Can you get your girl?
I can't. Like, this is crazy.
If we did a list of who she blamed, her name either isn't on it or doesn't come up after she goes through about 50, 60, 70 other things and people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's talk about this a little further, but we also have a comment.
Oh, great.
We have a caller line. Name and where you calling from?
My name is James. I'm calling from Queens.
Hey, James.
Okay, I'd like to make a comment there about the storm. I don't know if you realize that there are, you might say, responders that are on the scene today. You don't hear too much about them, called the amateur radio operators.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they are the ones that really help out in communities where the so-called communication is not there. Today we put our whole emphasis on internet and all that, but sooner or later that's going to come to an end, and these people step forward and help out in the community. You don't hear too much about this, but they are the ones that do the dirty work, the hard work. They even work with the police as well as with the Red Cross and helping people. And I think that a help should come out to these people, because these are the people that really prepare the communications. Without them, you wouldn't have nothing. And I don't know why they don't talk about the amateur radio operators that have radio transmitters in their home, and that's been in business before internet was there.
Hey, well, the good news is you just did that by shouting out those amateur radio operators, and you're right. The first responders and what those guys do is stories that need to be told, and that I'm glad that you brought that up. Now, before we get you out of here, do you have any family or friends that are in the eye of either Harvey that just happened or Irma, which is happening right now?
Well, I have friends that live down there, and they've been going through this for a long time. I know when Haiti went through hell, it was those radio operators that helped out. And I don't know why is it that many people always depend on these popular news media they give you, and they're not even there. They can't even get to that. So in the sense that even in Houston, that had that recent Harvey, those radio operators were there to help out.
Hey, well, we appreciate you.
I happen to be one of those operators that trained for that.
Well, James, we appreciate you and all the amateur radio operators out there and the folks doing what they need to do to try to help folks through these tough times. We appreciate you calling in, and please call in again.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And I think he raises a really good point, because when we think about first responders and those amateur radio operators, these are people that are choosing to stay in the eye of the storm. So at a time when over 7 million people have been ordered to evacuate Florida, you know, these are people that are choosing to stay in order to help with the relief efforts. And I think that definitely deserves to get acknowledged, and it's definitely sort of a level of bravery that I don't even think I have.
Hey, man, and I'm going to include them in first responders along with these radio operators. It's a blessing that is how they are choosing to serve, especially in these tough times.
Mm-hmm.
And shout out to James, who was is a radio operator, and to all those doing their thing right now down in Florida.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing these updates, and it's still coming in, saying that this is, it's Category 4, and this is likely to be the most devastation that anyone has seen for generations, not only in the state of Florida, but in the country of the United States. And given that we had Katrina 12 years ago, that's quite terrifying.
Yeah.
But again, thank you to those people that are on the ground that are helping to make a difference.
Yeah, we sometimes talk about, like, who are the heroes, who are the role models.
Mm-hmm.
They are heroes,
mm-hmm,
easily, and we appreciate them very much. I'm praying for them.
Yep.
All right. As always, though, we will continue to take your phone calls.
Yep.
At 212-650-6903. So far, we've talked about the unfortunate natural disaster that is in progress, called Hurricane Irma. Obviously, we've talked about Harvey the week before, and currently we were talking about the unfortunate disaster of Hillary again blaming people for what's going on.
Yeah, and I want to move to a quote that she said in her book, in which, you know, just before our caller, we talked about her taking a swipe at Bernie, as you mentioned, and she basically used a Facebook post from one of her supporters that she felt accurately described Bernie and his supporters. So It was, Bernie, I think America should get a pony. Hillary, how will you pay for the pony? Where will the pony come from? How will you get Congress to agree to the pony? Bernie, Hillary thinks America doesn't deserve a pony. Bernie supporters, Hillary hates ponies.
Hold on. The last voice sounded like the... Was the last one Bernie?
No, it's a collection of Bernies, which is the supporters.
No, I thought you would have came with a slightly different impersonation for the last one.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Hillary hates ponies. Hillary hates ponies.
See, that's what
I'm
talking
about. See, but that's stupid. But, like, anyways. But, so, what's interesting is that Bernie Sanders was actually on Stephen Colbert this week, on Thursday, actually. And for anybody who's a fan of Stephen Colbert, I'm a huge fan. They know that he does not mince words when he asks questions, right? And
okay.
So he actually asked Bernie to address that specific excerpt head on.
So Bernie Sanders,
yes,
is on Stephen Colbert,
yes,
literally in the midst of the week when Hillary's coming out talking about Obama, then Biden, and then blaming him,
yeah,
for her loss.
Yes.
Does Bernie say anything that's crazy?
Right. So she says, you know, she's basically saying in that excerpt that he's trying to, you know, sell people pipe dreams with no actual plan as to that how they would happen.
Yes,
right?
I think the phrase I heard, she almost compared him to being someone selling 8-minute abs. Like, you can't really just call a number and all of a sudden do something and, like, an infomercial, you get 8-minute abs. Like, almost like he's a slick car salesman in a way.
Basically. So his response to that? He says, well, one of the platforms that I campaigned on was free tuition for public education, for colleges. And he said, well, she thinks that was a pipe dream, and how would we ever pay for it? Well, let's ask Governor Cuomo of New York. And as we all know, New York has recently outlined that all public colleges will be free.
Yep, for residents of
New York. Residents of New York.
Doesn't sound like 8-minute abs to me.
I mean, that sounds like it's possible. So, and then, you know, the other one he mentioned was, you know, another campaign platform that he platformed on was around universal health care.
Yep. Something near and dear to you as a Canadian.
As a Canadian.
Yes.
You know, I still don't understand why that doesn't exist here. And
we're working on it.
It's so slow. I mean, that's.
Bernie's working on it.
About 50 years too late. Anyway, so he said, well, I've now got support from Democratic Senator Ms. Kamala Harris on that particular proposal. So it looks like there has been some movement there by the party.
And shout out to Senator Harris of California, who some have as an early favorite to potentially be the nominee for president of the United States in the Democratic Party in 2020.
Yes, and she also happens to be a woman of color.
Yes, she does. Shout out to Senator Harris. Interesting that Bernie would point out that he's not selling people pipe dreams.
Right.
That in reality, there's things that are taking place with the New York State college tuition or getting real politicians really behind, incredible politicians behind some of his platforms and policy beliefs. Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, for all of those that felt like they couldn't really make a difference, I think that, you know, what's happening right now, at least on the trajectory of some of these more independent type ideas being now having to be adopted by the Democratic Party because these are the things that the people want, I think is definitely a sign that something was achieved.
So before we close out on this topic, I want to inquire with the underdogs, both watching on Facebook Live at facebook.com/GregoryNeesmith or listening on WHCR 90.3 FM, The Voice of Harlem. The show is Get Your Peoples. Should we go get Hillary? Should we go get Bernie? Should we go get Biden? Should we go get Obama? Like, who should take the time out or sit in the corner or be kicked off the island?
Mm-hmm.
Because word is, this type of infighting or debate isn't going to stop anytime soon because the notorious HIC is going on a book tour for 4 months.
Whoa, that's a long time.
Yes, that's what it's been reported. So we might be getting these updates of her blaming everybody but herself in the next 4 months. I just want to say, in closing, Bernie is actually more popular than Hillary is right now.
What?
Yes, according to the recent NBC and Wall Street Journal poll, 30% of Americans have a positive rating towards Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
36% have a positive rating towards Donald Trump. And 44% of Americans have a positive rating for Bernie Sanders.
Wow. Well, you know what? I'd love to end on this quote because, you know, he, on that same interview, he was asked, what would he ask of Hillary? Right. And I think what was really great about this is that he said, hold on.
I was going to say I wanted to share one of maybe a Democrat dissenter, but and on your positive note. No, because I almost wanted to say, like, this is what people are saying inside the party. And then we finish with Bernie saying something.
Okay,
nice.
Go ahead.
So one Democrat said, and it's always interesting to me when people want to be unnamed because it probably means they're saying something that is potentially harsh. They said that basically she should basically be quiet and shut the effing up.
Okay.
It was very harsh. They want her to literally go away.
Wow. Okay.
That's what some of the sentiment of the Democratic Party, because they're feeling anxious. They're like, why do we keep reliving the past?
Mm.
Which I think is cool, because now I know what you're going to share. On a more positive note, Bernie, from my understanding, doesn't go down that route.
He just thinks that we have to move forward. He'd like her to join us in the fight for a Medicare for all single payer system and taking on the fossil fuel industry so we transform our energy system away from fossil fuel and move towards sustainable energy. Let's get together, take on Trump's desire to divide us up, and go forward with a progressive agenda. Let's ask her if she'll do that.
That's positive Bernie Sanders.
Positive.
All right. We shall see if Hillary takes him up on his offer, which I think is the correct one.
Yep.
But if this keeps up, get your girls in there.
Yep.
With that, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the NFL.
Mr. Michael Bennett.
Michael Bennett and policing.
Mm-hmm.
More underdog stuff, your phone calls and your comments after this break. Welcome back to Underdog Stuff with Gregory Neesmith, live radio show and podcast. Today's show, get your people or get your peeps or get your mans in them.
Because not everybody we're getting is a male, so.
That's, yeah. Notice during the Notorious HIC commentary, I said get your girls in them.
Right. Okay.
Get your women's in them.
Mm-hmm. But the, yeah.
Get your peeps.
Get your peeps.
And shout out to all the peeps who are listening on WHCR.org or riding around in their cars on this sunny Sunday in New York City, or folks who are watching on Facebook Live at facebook.com/Gregory Neesmith. We appreciate you. And I've said this before, I'll say it again. This is the place to be on Sundays, especially for those who are boycotting the NFL.
Speaking of the NFL.
Yes, you see what I did there? You see what I did there? It's time to get into our unjust or just right story of the week. And speaking of the NFL, Michael Bennett is back in the news.
Yes.
And he is the defensive lineman for the Seattle Seahawks.
Seattle Seahawks.
You know who he is now.
He plays on the same team as Sierra's husband.
You're not supposed to. Mike.
Anyways.
Russell Wilson is his own man who is married to Sierra.
Right. So is he not Sierra's husband?
I know, but, you know, people don't like to be referred to
as. Is he not baby future's stepdad?
You know, for people who don't even know what future ever like how, like what, like they don't even know if that's a correct sentence. But future is the name of a rapper.
I don't think there's any. You think there's people who don't know who Future is? Okay, anyways, let's talk Michael Bennett.
Yes. So for those who may not know, Michael Bennett was in Las Vegas for the Floyd Money Mayweather against Conor McGregor fight.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, he was taken down by police officers
mm-hmm.
in Las Vegas that night because there were reports of an armed man who was on the scene or in that vicinity. And it was said that they profiled Michael Bennett as being that guy and then chased him down and eventually put him under arrest, I believe.
Exactly. And I mean, he is 6'4", 274 pounds, black, running in a crowd of people, you know. And so the police basically looked up and went through a mental thought process of who of the people that we see right now is the most likely to be a shooter.
Yes. And then he claims that they actually pointed their guns at him once they got a hold of him. And he says for basically doing nothing more than simply being a black man in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yep. And he said that the officer that did have the gun actually told him that he would blow his F bleep head off.
Yeah. Racial profiling.
And so obviously, you know, that going through that would have anybody sort of terrified, confused, and helpless, which is how he said that he felt. And he actually posted on Twitter and Instagram his account of what happened earlier this week. And I think what's really sad about it is that a lot of black men of color could really relate to it, I think.
Hey, there's a black man of color sitting right next mm-hmm. to you who can relate to it. I've been pulled over
mm-hmm.
and or while walking approached to put my hands up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a total of, let's call it around 7 to 10 times in my life.
Wow. That's a lot of times. You think it's in the double digits, maybe?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
So, for example, in Lower Manhattan, walking from an event, just having drinks with coworkers, about to walk towards the subway so I can get on the subway to go back home.
Mm-hmm.
Cop car pulls up. They jump out the car and they're like, throw your hands up in the air. Pull out the guns. Because there was reports of someone in the area who had committed a crime.
Wow.
And that wasn't me.
Mm-hmm.
One time driving my car, two police officers come up quickly with sirens, surround my vehicle and pull up on it and get out the car. And then they come up to me and go, oh, there's reports of a stolen vehicle. Clearly it's not you since you didn't run. So again, and then I've been pulled over countless times while driving and they want to see my license, registrations, everything checks out. And then they're like, oh, all good. Or your taillight was out, but it seems to be working now.
Wow.
So those are just a few of the stories where I've been in situations with the cops, either drawn guns or pulled over when nothing happened. And just like in Michael Bennett's case, while the facts are still being pulled together as to how everything went down, guess what fact we do know?
What?
He wasn't guilty of being the suspect they were looking for.
Exactly. And I think, you know, the feelings that he described in his letter, he said that all I could think of was I'm going to die for no other reason than I'm black and that my skin color is somehow a threat. My life flashed before my eyes. I thought about my little girls. Would I ever play with them again? Or watch them have kids or be able to kiss my wife again and tell her that I love her? And essentially, he says, you know, they handcuffed him, placed him in a police car, put a gun to his head before ever confirming his identity. And basically, they released him without any legitimate justification for the officer's abusive conduct. You know, he said that apparently, obviously, they realized that he wasn't a thug or a common criminal or even just an ordinary black man like you are, Gregory. You know, basically, he said that once they realized he's Michael Bennett, a famous professional football player, then that's when, you know, he was basically let go. And I think that that's another really important thing, that that's why people are standing with Colin Kaepernick, because, you know, that's why it's so important, because these things are happening to people. And when we're seeing all of these, you know, deaths coming of people from people of color by, you know, officers meant to protect them, you have to wonder, you know, why is this happening? You know, why we need people to stand up for the underdogs, for the ordinary people that don't have the benefit of being rich, famous, and notable.
Yeah, and this is why, to your point, Colin was taking the knee last year during the national anthem. And you know, there's still obviously some structural and institutional issues when it comes to race and policing, because it's one thing to make the mistake, but the aggression, the language used when interacting with him, it's all of that that makes it so disgusting, disheartening, that makes it so unacceptable, because it's beyond just making the initial mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be one thing if that was that.
Mm-hmm.
It would be investigated. We'd find out what would happen. But no, now the Las Vegas Police Department is going over the top with its response.
Yep.
And the aftermath to this.
Yep.
So it's one thing to make the mistake, but now it's a pile on as to why it's just, it's hard being a black man sometimes.
You're preaching to the choir. We on the radio in Harlem. I don't think that's anything that anybody does not already know. Trust me.
No, well, you know, I think there might be 60-something million people who might find it a little hard to believe, though, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I'm saying seriously. Like, I wish it was more understood, but I actually don't think it is. Amongst a lot of Americans. Now, what happened with the Las Vegas Police Department since the incident?
So essentially, I think what really sort of set things off was that, you know, Michael Bennett ended his response, basically ended his post by saying that he's considering filing a civil rights lawsuit against the police department. So the next day, the president of the Las Vegas Police Protective Association basically sent a letter to the NFL commissioner, Mr. Roger Goodell, that said, on behalf of the rank and file members of the Metropolitan Police Organization, I request that you conduct an investigation and take appropriate action into Michael Bennett's obvious false allegations against our officers. While the NFL might condone Bennett's disrespect for our American flag and everything it symbolizes, we hope the league will not ignore Bennett's false accusations against our police officers. They also went on to insist that the officers involved in the incident had, quote, reasonable suspicion, I feel like we've heard that before,
yes,
to believe Bennett may have been involved in the shooting, and they acted appropriately. They say that they also went on to say that Bennett's claim that he was detained only because he's a black man in the wrong place at the wrong time is, and I quote this, offensive to the men and women in law enforcement. So basically they're saying that anybody saying that, or anybody assuming that black people get singled out just because they're black, are offending police officers everywhere.
First of all, what does kneeling during the national anthem have to do with him and the incident in Las Vegas?
That's a very good question.
But now we just went left. Like, it's one thing if you feel disrespected or you want to play the PR game about who said what and your word and his word, but how we talking about the flag?
Basically, they're like, oh, this is one of those black guys that's aligned with Colin Kaepernick. So let's add that angle to this story.
Let me be very clear. The reason why policing and race is such a big deal is that it's one thing when I'm dealing with people one-on-one, right? If you and me have an issue or me and someone else has an issue, that's different. Police are an extension of the state.
Yep.
An extension of the government. And so whenever the state has set up a structural and institutional challenge to, like, you just like being a citizen and living your life, and me feeling literally one of the most uncomfortable things in my life is when driving or walking and there's police around, and it shouldn't be the case. So this is a big deal, because we're not talking person to person. We're talking about an extension of the state that seems to disproportionately treat me differently than it does other people. And that is, it just, I just can't believe that people don't get it. And so you want to bring up American flags? That don't have anything to do with you profiling someone based on what they look like.
Exactly. It looks like we have a caller that actually wants to talk about that too. So we'll get to them shortly. I think that the other thing is that essentially, you know, basically what the Las Vegas Police Department is, their version of events, just to sort of let people know.
Yeah, give the full story.
Is that they got a call of shots being fired at the casino. They didn't know exactly sort of what the shooter looked like, and they looked for any suspicious people. And Bennett qualified because he allegedly attempted to flee after noticing a group of officers. And so the exact truth about what happened probably won't come out for another few days, so we'll probably talk about this on the next show, but there's a good chance that it will actually come out because, guys, this is Las Vegas. There's more security cameras there than anywhere else in the world. Yeah, if there's anywhere you want something to happen, it's in a casino in Las Vegas.
Because they're trying to see if people cheating.
Exactly.
So yes, and I think that is an excellent point. So I can't wait for all the video cam stuff to come out. And for any of our listeners right now who are watching on Facebook Live or listening on the radio, if you get a chance to at some point before the show is over, can someone Google our citizens' right to flee? I believe I read once that there was a Supreme Court decision that says us as citizens, we have the right to flee or leave situations or scenes without the presumption that we are guilty or that we've done anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want, if someone can, because I believe that also some may be going, but he moved in another direction. I believe that he's constitutionally actually allowed to leave a scene.
I mean, there's gunshots. You're that's allowed to run away. Everybody's
exactly.
running.
But I want, I know, but I want to bring that up for people because we do have some curious conservatives or Trump supporters that often listen to the show. And I know that you can't run or flee, but I actually want to bring it back to like what's right and allowed, but also what's legal too, because I know my rights.
Right.
With that, let's see who we have on the line. Caller, name, where you calling from?
Hi, this is Deborah from Manhattan. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
I'm well, thank you. You know, I was listening to you talk about the flag.
Yes.
I just gone to a couple of graduations, high school, preferably in a mostly white area. And I'm watching, you know, the whole pomp and circumstance of the flag being brought down the aisle and, you know, and the students sit down. And it's all very nice. And we stand up and, you know, they're asking, you know, people are starting to sing the national anthem. And I'm singing it. You know, I mean, it matters really not to me because I don't, you know, I'm a guest, and I'm looking up and I'm looking around and I'm singing, and I'm looking at all of these white people, and not one of them knew how or what the words were to the national anthem. And it's the same type of person that would say that they're insulted. Half of these people don't know anything about the history. I mean, if you ask them what the first four presidents are of the United States, some of them can't even tell you. And so, and I've seen that on a station where, you know, they were talking about education. And they asked young people who the first three or four presidents were, and they couldn't tell them. But they went to China, they went to Russia, and they went somewhere else, and the kids could tell you. So when I see people make a big thing over something like that, I'm like, you know, you all are not asking these people the right questions. You really aren't asking them the right questions. I mean, they'll tell you Constitution this, Constitution that. They don't know anything about the Constitution. They really don't.
So Deborah, what do you think it's really about then?
I could say, but I'm not going to, because I don't want to put anything more out there that's negative than already is.
I can respect that.
Okay.
I can respect
that. But it's ugly, and but more so, it's not just ugly, but it's ignorant. And I never realized just how ignorant some people are. And it's not because of the fact, I'm finding that a lot of college-bound people are very ignorant, and they need to take their heads out of the phone. They really do, because they really need to really sit down and read and reflect and find out what is, and stop allowing these machines to run their lives, because it's very frightening sometimes when I observe people.
Yeah, and actually to that point about just folks being college bound or even folks who finished college, I've seen different studies that simple questions like, is Judge Judy on the Supreme Court?
No.
And 10 to 15% of college students who say yes.
Wow.
So just as an example of like, that's the gap we have in terms of just people understanding just some basic things that are going on in the world.
Yeah.
But
see, that gave me a headache. Yeah. I'm going to let you guys go. Yep. I enjoy your show.
Thank you, Deborah. We appreciate you
Take
calling
care.
In.
Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
Bye.
Yeah, I think a point that Deborah makes that I think is very key is it's even not really about the flag, right? Or the anthem. Like some people don't even know the words to the anthem, but it's something deeper. And unfortunately, I think at times it's something more sinister, something that is more harmful in terms of folks not acknowledging diversity, folks not being aware of the past, folks not getting context or institutional or cultural issues. And
I mean, I love when she said they're not asking the right questions.
Yeah.
They're focused on the wrong thing. They wanna be focused and get mad because somebody's sitting down during a national anthem that they don't even really know or understand. But yet they, when asked why, they don't wanna ask and sort of engage in a dialogue as to, well, why is this person doing that? Why
yes.
is this person protesting?
Yeah, I don't want them to protest during the game, but do you at least understand why they're protesting?
Why they're protesting.
Because actually, if you do understand, then maybe we can do something about it so that we don't have to protest at the game.
Exactly.
And also, I'm also tired of folks who are like, they don't want to involve causes and their sports. October's coming up. It's going to be people wearing pink for cancer awareness. We have Hispanic Heritage Month. We got Black. We have a lot of causes that happen and get promoted and talked about and experienced through sports. We got folks like J.J. Watt getting involved in causes like Harvey. So also, let's stop it with the I don't mix causes in my sports.
Mm-hmm. And I want to end on a positive note with this story, because we talked about the police calling on Roger Goodell to actually take punitive action.
I know,
against.
But before you do your positive note, should I say my negative note?
Sure.
I'm not watching the NFL until Colin Kaepernick gets signed. Okay, back to you.
You could have said that after. But. Essentially, you know, the Las Vegas Police Department, they want Roger Goodell and the NFL to punish Michael Bennett. And for basically coming out and publicly saying negative things about them.
Get your mans in them.
But Roger Goodell actually issued a statement saying that Michael Bennett represents the best of the NFL. He's a leader on his team and his community. Our foremost concern is the welfare of Michael and his family. While we understand the Las Vegas Police Department will address this at some point. The issues Michael has been raising deserve serious attention from all of our leaders in every community. We will support Michael and all NFL players in promoting mutual respect between law enforcement and the communities they loyally serve, and fair and equal treatment under the law. It's important to note that Commissioner Goodell has not sort of directly responded to the request to punish Michael Bennett, but I think that that statement says a lot.
Shout out to Roger Goodell, who there's been times when I've gotten on him as a commissioner and his handling of things, but that is a very good statement and good to see the support he's throwing his way to one of the great men and players in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And I just noticed that, oh, I could have saved the NFL captain.
Like to interrupt me because that's you're a man and that's what you guys do.
What?
Yep.
Get your people. Oh, that would be me. I do raise my hand, though.
But you're raising your hand and talking at the same time, so it doesn't count.
It was multitasking.
Right.
That's
okay. We got mansplainers and interrupters on this show, too. We're not. Gregory Neesmith is not immune to mansplaining, but it's okay.
Can I offer to do better?
You just interrupted me to say, can I offer to do better? But
no,
yes,
you paused just then.
Okay.
I'm going to get myself and get my people.
I think you need to get yourself. Get your life.
Yes. I'm going to take a break and get my life. Although I'll have a lot of time to do it because I won't be rushing home to watch the NFL doubleheader or Sunday Night Football because I will not be watching any football. Until when?
Until cap is signed.
Yes. And at this rate, I may never watch, unfortunately, the NFL ever again.
So even if Roger Goodell and fully comes out and supports everything, but, you know, it becomes too late in the season for cap, do you think you're still not going to tune in?
If it's not till next year, then I'll wait till next year.
Okay.
And with that, we're going to take a quick break and then more underdog stuff after this break. And we have the Un of the Week coming up.
Mm-hmm. But this was a good one.
This one's your man's in them.
This one's your man's in them. Okay, this is no one's man's.
No, I think the white nationalists actually.
The Nazis man's in them.
I think, you know, Breitbart, some folks are down with him.
All right.
We're going to talk a little Under the Week, and I'll give you a little hint. Catholics, culture, and immigration.
Well, it is Sunday.
Yes, it is. And Jesus knows our heart. I don't know if he knows this guy's heart, but we will find out more underdog stuff. Today's show, get your people, get your peeps, get your man's in them, and your woman's in them after this. Welcome back to Underdog Stuff with Gregory Neesmith, live radio show and podcast that we do here every week on WHCR 90.3 FM, the voice of Harlem. In studio, the Underdog Stuff team is in full effect. Gregory Neesmith and Asha Davis.
Hi.
And the underdogs are in full effect, too. Both calling in at area code 212-650-6903. That's 212-650-6903. Shout out to Deborah and James for joining the conversation. And shout out to all the underdogs watching on Facebook Live at facebook.com/Gregory Neesmith. And I believe we have a comment from online.
Yeah, I want to shout out Keon, who's watching on Facebook Live. We talked a little bit about earlier about sort of what is the issue really about, you know, when we talk about folks kneeling for the national anthem. And he had a really short and sweet and great comment. He said, what is it really about? It's about race and isms.
Keon, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Keon. One of the brilliance and insightfulness is often like found inside of the simplicity of things too. And just literally in like a sentence. I get it.
Yep. Exactly.
And I think W.E.B. Du Bois said it best centuries ago, saying that race was going to be one of the major issues of our time. And it continues to be both overtly and underlying.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, to his point, too, I often think it's good to put stuff in context. And I posted this picture a few weeks ago, and it shows slavery, but then it also shows segregation and Jim Crow, and reminds us that that didn't end until only 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes when the conversation is about slavery ended a couple centuries ago, we feel like, oh, that was a while ago. Everything should be fine by then. But actually, freedom for African Americans only started to happen as a policy, like actual law, only 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think that things can change that quickly, let me tell you, things don't change that quickly.
No, they don't.
And I appreciate what he said, because race is still an underlying issue and an overt issue in our society.
Yeah. And I think, you know, he also actually made another comment that, you know, because I had sort of raised the point just again before we went to break about, you know, if Roger Goodell, you know, further comes out in support of Michael Bennett and such, like, would that ever sort of sway you to watch the NFL again this season? And, you know, Keon actually had a good comment. He says, there's a stark contrast between Goodell's words for Bennett and actions concerning Cap. The words are sort of all feel good talk. Mm-hmm. He's saying, you know, and it's sort of like, until there's acknowledgement and action around teams fundamentally not selecting Colin Kaepernick, not based on his ability to provide value to their team based on his skill, but solely because of the fact that he is taking a stand for an end to racial profiling by police, it is actually quite quite crazy and quite disgusting. I think, you know, either a team signs him or teams face some sort of punitive action for picking players that are statistically not as good as he is.
Statistically not as good, eye test not as good, not as good.
Right.
I agree with him. Like I said, I'm not – talk is not going to bring me back to watching the NFL. Action will.
Yeah. Seems like you guys are on the same page.
Yes. So Sunday.
Sunday.
There's our show.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of other stuff to do.
Speaking of Sundays, we got a church, right?
We go on to Catholic Church.
Catholic Church.
For our honor of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Your man's in them.
Oh, gosh.
Steve Breitbart Bannon,
mm-hmm.
former chief strategist to Donald Trump,
mm-hmm.
who recently resigned.
Resigned. He was not fired. I keep missing the cue.
I don't know how much more I can do. Like, did you see the emphasis?
I really did. You even started speaking louder and everything.
So even Steve Breitbart Bannon, back in the news for saying some crazy things related to immigration, DACA, the Catholic Church, former chief strategist to Donald Trump, who resigned not too long ago.
I think he was fired.
Thank you.
But they said he did resign, though. No, I'm joking.
All right. Steve Bannon, who, for folks who want to actually hear him speak, he doesn't do a lot of actual on TV interviews. He's going to be on 60 Minutes later today. And he is reported to have said a couple things about immigration, DACA, and the Catholic Church.
What he said now?
Basically, he said that the Catholic Church needs, and these are his words, needs illegal aliens to fill the churches.
Say that one more time.
He said, this is, quote, this isn't, I just want folks to know, this isn't Gregory paraphrasing. This is Steve Breitbart Bannon.
Mm-hmm.
When Charlie Rose inquired to him about, hey, what's up with the Catholic Church? What's their stance on immigration? He said, the Catholic Church needs illegal aliens to fill their churches.
So he's basically saying that the Catholic Church is taking in people that need help, the poor, the meek, the, he says that the church is taking in these people because they need them to fill the pews to what, like pay their tithes and things like that?
Basically.
So they're going to support legislation that helps these people, not because that's what Jesus would do, but because they need these people to fill the pews?
Yes. So he's saying that the church, while doing something in service of its mission, he's saying they're not doing it because they're being good Catholics. He's literally insinuating that they're doing it for financial and then also political wants, because it has been shown that the more diverse party is the Democratic Party. So also both illegal and potentially documented workers and new citizens or immigrants to the country will become voters in the Democratic Party. So it's twofold. He's accusing them of doing this for both economic reasons of the church and political reasons of the church, not because they want to do the mission of being good Catholics.
And he's basically saying while he is Catholic, right?
Yes, he is. He is a...
Yeah.
He's Catholic.
So he's basically saying, you know, this isn't an issue about being a good Catholic. This is an issue about sort of the sovereignty of the country and protecting the integrity and the constitution of the country, essentially.
Yeah, and also he takes a bit of a jab at the Catholic Church, who we know over the years has come under fire for some of the issues it has with child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And he also points out that he says the church has not been able to handle its issues. So on top of that, it definitely needs this influx of illegal aliens, as he puts it, as opposed to the way it's been operating for hundreds of years.
So is he part of the Catholic that created those like Jim Crow laws and like justified black people as 3/5 of a human? Is that the part of Catholic is that the type of Catholic he is?
He is known to be down with white nationalists. And for those who get all worked up about whether or not I'm calling him a racist or a white supremacist or a Nazi, I don't even need to go that far. I just need to tell you that he is known and defined as a white nationalist and populist. And guess what? Those who want to keep the country pure, those who believe in whites are becoming disenfranchised and want to make America great again, those policies align with those of the KKK, of white supremacists and white nationalists.
I mean, just so that people understand the sort of direness of the issue of DACA or, you know, the Dreamers Law, essentially, if this actually went through, 850,000 people would be displaced in America and sent back to whatever country that they don't. This affects 850,000 people.
And it's good that you brought up DACA, because he also goes in on Cardinal Timothy Dolan of New York, saying he is in vehement disagreement with the cardinal who actually supports DACA, because Steve Bannon is like, no DACA, no illegal immigration. I don't care if they're dreamers, nightmares, nappers, whatever it is. He's just like, they don't belong here.
I think he's a nightmare.
I think you get your man's
like, if they're dreamers, he's the nightmare, right?
So speaking of DACA, mm-hmm. what also happened this week, which is, I think, why Bannon made the news and was interviewed, is that earlier this week, Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced that the Trump administration would phase out the program known as DACA
mm-hmm.
and temporarily block the deportation of those immigrants who were brought here to the United States for 6 months, allowing Congress to now have the ability to pass an actual law or to do nothing in those next 6 months.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, you know, that's good and that's bad, because 6 months is not a lot of time. It's basically like saying, okay, you're good for now. Most people have to plan their lives more than 6 months in advance. And so if you're basically saying, I can't tell you for certain right now as to whether or not you will be still in the country, you know, in 6 months, then that's going to be a problem.
It definitely will be a problem. And, you know, it's it's going to be interesting because, and just so folks who are listening along, we appreciate you. You're listening to Underdog Stuff on WHCR 90.3 FM, the voice of Harlem, New York City, that we do a live radio show and podcast here every week. That I'm worried because this Congress, which has been led by the Republican Party in both the House and the Senate, hasn't done much so far this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be interesting to see if they can do something bipartisan to get something done, because that's what it'll take to get this law passed. Now, there might be hope, though, for bipartisanship.
Mm-hmm.
Because this week, guess who Donald Trump's been hanging out with?
Who, Democrats?
Your peoples and them. is it okay to say your peoples this time?
Yeah, I like these ones.
So Chuck Schumer
mm-hmm.
and Nancy Pelosi,
mm-hmm.
who are the leaders of the Democratic Party in both the House and the Senate,
mm-hmm.
have been hanging out with Trump this week.
Mm-hmm.
First, the word is, it's reported that Nancy Pelosi was like, yo, Trump. Now, I'm sure she didn't sound like that when she said it, but she's like, basically, hey, a lot of these folks who are impacted by DACA are probably feeling a bit worried that they're going to be deported or shipped out of the country over the next 6 months. Can you send out a tweet or something to let them know everything's all good?
Mm-hmm.
And then supposedly Trump listened and he did send out a tweet saying, hey, DACA impacted folks, dreamers, all good for the next 6 months. Don't worry. Listening to Donald Trump, listening to a different Nancy Pelosi is like the Trump whisperer now.
I mean, I guess, you know, they like, I remember you were dissing Nancy Pelosi a few shows ago, but
get your girls in them.
Right. So I think, you know, in his tweet, he said this. I just want to read this verbatim. He said, for all of those DACA, he goes, for all of those brackets DACA that are concerned about your status during the 6 month period, you have nothing to worry about. No action! Exclamation part, right? Now, I think it's important to break this down because he's saying you have nothing to worry about. You have nothing to worry about. You do have stuff to worry about because you don't know if you're still going to be in the country by March. Like, that to me is just, you're just so oblivious. You don't understand. And like, the Democrats are like, okay, just hold this off for like 6 months. Like, please, if you can, because we got to figure this out. Not, come on, man. Like, that's a super messed up thing to even start putting into motion. Like, you're going to like send 850,000 people out of the country. That's crazy.
I agree with you.
That's crazy.
I agree with you. Big picture. Of course, they have stuff to be worried about. I think the spirit of what Pelosi wanted Trump to assure those 800,000 folks of, who I consider basically to be American citizens because they've been here basically their entire life,
right?
That they won't be rounded up between now and the 6 months and deported, which I think is a very fair concern given how aggressive ICE has been and the Trump administration has been around illegal immigrants, undocumented workers in this country. So it doesn't go far enough, obviously, but hopefully it's at least one thing to not have worry about, literally, as they literally go through their daily life, that they're literally just going to be rounded up.
Exactly. Like, that's what is so intense. Like, it's basically, I was looking at, you know, how would it actually happen? Basically, like, 850 people a day would be rounded up. Like, they actually sorted out the logistics of how this would actually happen. So, yes, thank you, you know, guys, for having a stay for 6 months. But seriously, like, this needs to happen. And Nancy Pelosi did tweet. She said, thank you for this commitment, Mr. President. But real protections will only come from your signing the DREAM Act ASAP.
Yes.
So basically, just the only protections are going to come once you just undo what you just did. It's basically like, just go back to what it was before. Like, why did you even do this in the first place?
Well, he did it because, unfortunately, if it's only an executive order, it is at the whim of the president. It's also been deemed unconstitutional because Congress is supposed to pass immigration law. So this has actually opened up the opportunity for Congress to never make this an issue ever again and make it legal and official that these folks are good to go from here on out?
Well, I'm going to end on a positive note, okay? So this is a quote from Donald Trump that I'm going to say is at least what I'm hoping is going to be a positive.
I'm shocked.
He says, the people of United States want to see a coming together, at least to an extent. We're different parties. We have different thoughts, different feelings, different ideas. But I think you're coming to see a much stronger coming together. Now, it's not grammatically correct, but the sentiment is there. And that's the best we can hope for.
Hold on. It is Twitter, though.
That was not Twitter. That was a statement.
Oh,
that was a statement told to reporters. That was way too many characters for a tweet. So clearly he don't tweet.
Well, you know, he does do run-on tweets,
no,
right?
That's,
he does, like,
no,
he strings them together.
Yeah, but no, that's not it.
I think this might be the first time that you've ever ended on a positive note with Donald Trump being the positive note.
This is the first time that I've ended on a positive note in this show without you interrupting me, too.
I told you I can do better.
Right? Look at that. First times and...
Two for two. Donald Trump positive.
Yeah.
And me positive.
Yeah. You see that? Look, we're already heading... We're starting... Even now, we're starting to see a stronger coming together.
That just like the Democratic Party and Donald Trump.
Look at that.
Because... But wait, there's more.
Oh.
Another positive note.
Oh.
Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and Donald Trump worked together to get some stuff done in Washington.
Right. I wish we were working together with the Republican Party and not just Donald Trump, because God knows how long he's going to be there. But, you know, I hope he gets something. So
now you just took us down again. It was a positive.
I was trying to have on a positive. But then I'm listening to you say it back. Like, we should have just ended it there.
No, good news. Harvey relief passed. Debt ceiling passed. Avoiding government shutdown done. All because Nancy... The Trump whisperer Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and Trump were able to figure stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see if more of that happens going forward.
Right.
All right. A couple quick underreported stories, and then we'll take a quick break. Underreported stories that we want to make sure people are aware of and keep an eye out on are two things that happened.
Yes. So the first one is Betsy DeVos is back in the news.
Get your girls in them.
We need to get her. We need to get her out of there. She just announced a rollback of the Title IV guidance on campus sexual assault. So essentially, long story short, when Barack Obama was in office, he had essentially created some guidance on how college and university campuses across the country need to deal with sexual assault, because there were a lot of cases that were going underreported. There were a lot of things that were happening that not only just underreported, but unreported. Women were suffering, people were suffering, and we needed to have better protections and controls in place, especially for females being sexually assaulted, because as we know, I think 1 in 3 women is sexually assaulted at college.
Right,
So Betsy DeVos actually is rolling this back. She is basically claiming that it's unfair to the people that are being accused of sexual assault. And she basically says, if everything is sexual assault, then nothing is assault. Which I thought was so crazy. So this is just a quick, this is something that's currently sort of ongoing, and the story is going to continue to unfold. But I think it's not something that people are talking about, and it's something that affects a lot of us.
It does. And what I'll just add is, to me, this is another example of a loss of context.
Mm-hmm.
The Obama administration didn't pass this executive order to like punish the potential abusers. They did this because, to your point, there was an issue. There was a problem with there being actual justice and creating a place where women felt comfortable coming forward, knowing that there would be due process and that it would be investigated, that it would be taken seriously, because we don't want this to keep happening. And so this was put in place to right a wrong or something that was out of balance.
Exactly.
And I don't believe that in a year or two that that's been solved. So there's still room and a need for this. But it goes back to something I read the other day, which is, I think in the early 2000s, if you polled Republicans, and I believe it was both male and female, but it may have been just white males, what percent of them believe that they are being discriminated against, that white people being discriminated against? It was 6% in the early 2000s. Jump forward to about a year ago, that same poll has now tripled to 18%. And so there's this growing sentiment of somehow that things like this are ways to oppress or discriminate or overextend or overreach against the, in this case, a white male majority. And like, no, that's not the case. This is to try to get things back to even. We don't want to live in a world where women are continuing to be assaulted and not have a way to come forward. And the percentages say that there's more women impacted when we don't aggressively support them than folks who've been accused being victims of this.
Especially, you know, being at school, and especially as, you know, one of the primary reasons that Obama even issued this was because of the increase in suicides of women basically being assaulted, not being believed, not being taken seriously, and, you know, resorting to and falling into terrible depression that ultimately leads to sort of grave consequences. So again, this is definitely something that's being underreported, will affect a lot of people, and we need to pay very, very close attention to some of these undoings, again, that this administration is trying to do.
Yeah, go get Bessie. She needs to do much better, and I'm upset that as a woman also and as our Secretary of Education, that this is where she's shifting her focus to. Yeah. But we will keep an eye out on this.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And one other underreported story of the week.
I know some people don't even know this. I actually ran into some colleagues at work, and we were talking about Whole Foods and
Whole Paycheck.
Get your whole paycheck, because Whole Foods, which, as we talked about briefly on another show, has recently been purchased by Amazon, has cut prices by as much as 43% on the items in the store. Yep. And essentially, you know, the basically a senior vice president at the Food Marketing Institute sort of analyzed this and was like, and his take is that price was the largest barrier to Whole Foods. I think we all know that, you know, we were not.
I hope they didn't pay a lot of money. Anybody, to get that consulting advice.
Anybody that was that's ever tried to shop there knows that $100 will get you one bag of groceries. But he goes on to say that Amazon has demonstrated that it's willing to invest to dominate the categories that it decides to compete in. And so I think that there's going to be a lot more details emerging as to why these prices were cut and sort of the differences we're going to start seeing at Whole Foods. But I think what's really important is that good food is becoming more affordable, and that is definitely a positive. And so things like avocados, organic bananas, you know, things like that. These are things that have been cut quite significantly in price. So, and we're out here in Harlem, and there's a new Whole Foods right at up the street from here at 125th Street, and might be worth checking out now. It's a little cheaper.
Yes, and we will definitely revisit this story, because at some point, speaking of underdogs and situations, I do want us to eventually talk about how do we feel when a place like Whole Foods comes to a community like Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, we will definitely talk more about that. With that, end of the show. Get your people, get your mans in them, because as we learned this week, there are definitely some folks in politics, culture, and our personal lives that need a time out to go sit in the corner or literally get kicked off the island.
Yep.
And we talked about it today, and we appreciate you. And if you missed any of today's show, there's a podcast.
Yep.
That'll be out tomorrow on iTunes, Podomatic, Google Play, and YouTube. And you can subscribe, and shout out to all of you who've made the podcast number in the top 100 in society and culture on Podomatic out of thousands of podcasts. That's a pretty big deal, and we appreciate you. And as always, I leave you with my favorite quote.
Yep.
Underdogs, can't nobody do it like you do it. Nobody. Back next week. Appreciate you. Peace.